This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Good evening. This is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show, the first one of the season. In terms of the season starting, of course, we've been with you throughout pre-season, but now the season has started, and I'm joined by George from the 9 Years podcast, as always, with me, Matt Beadle, through to 9 p.m. this evening. Now, George is happy opposite me. He does look like he's smiling. However, there is a bit of misery, because this weekend, AFC Wimbledon lost to Rotherham, George. What happened?
It's a tough opening game for anyone. I mean, I think that's the first thing we have to say, is that Rotherham are a team that just got relegated from the Championship. They are a good, solid team. Most people have them finishing in the playoffs or maybe even in the auto. So, you know, it's a shame to lose opening game. But when you look at it, we had a goalie making his senior debut. Not Nathan Trott, who is our goalie in online, but Nick Zanoff, who was our third choice goalie last year, played.
Now, we talked a lot about goalkeepers on this show during pre-season, and the fact that Aaron Ramsdale was there last season, it was absolutely brilliant, and Wimbledon dip into this loan market. This is where the dangers that I did bring up many times in the few shows that we've done together come back to haunt you. Now, Nathan Trott has gone back to West Ham, the first choice keeper. You've got Zanev in there. At fault for the first goal, would you say?
He was at fault for the first goal, yeah. There was a cross came in. He had absolutely no right to go for it, and he went for it and got caught in no man's land. But it's his first game in men's football, so you're not really going to hold that against him. But yeah, Nathan Trott's gone back to West Ham for a groin injury, is what the club have said, and that they're going to review the situation later on in the week, which doesn't bode well, because if it's a serious injury and he has had those before, and it looks like he could be out for a month or maybe even more, do we look at getting someone else in on loan and sending Nathan Trott back? In which case, we've wasted a pre-season with goalkeeping sort of practice.
So, I mean, all things being considered, that would probably be the case, which is a bit of transfer business that I'd imagine Wally Downs didn't want to have to think about.
No. And also the fact is, now that we're so late on in the window, that most of our sort of our list when we drew it up of 10 goalies who would like to get in, the rest of that list has probably already gone somewhere else by now. So we're a very long way down in terms of what we're after and what we can get in.
Yeah, it was interesting as well, his comments after the game from Wally Downs. Obviously said he thought Zanev was terrific. He said he came in, he was commanding, made a great save early on, a good one towards the end. Great kicking, really pleased for him. He's saying all the things he has to because Nick needs, you know, a bit of oomph.
Yeah, no, Nick played really well. He made a couple of really, really good sort of outstanding saves, and he didn't do him... He only made one mistake in the whole game, and it's just a shame that that cost us that first goal. So he's come out with it with a lot of credibility, but it's just, do you trust him? For a team where we're going to finish in the league or aiming to finish, can you risk having a goalie with no experience?
And your thoughts on the game, as it were, obviously went behind, equalised, and then lost late on.
Yeah, we started off really poorly. It was first half was the same as first half of last season, where we were just poor. We couldn't string any passes together. We didn't look sort of fully there, but then second half it was like a completely different game, and we really improved. We really started stringing passes together. We looked dangerous. We scored from a corner from the first time in a competitive game for a while, and that's been really encouraging, because pre-season we scored a lot of goals from set pieces, and we haven't done that for a very long time.
Piggott on the score sheet again. It's just the norm, right?
Yeah, it's almost, I think a couple of our fans were kind of hoping he would have a slow start, sort of certainly for the next 5 or 6 days till the Championship window closes. Because right now we just need to keep him for a season.
Okay, now you put the poll out for Man of the Match candidates. Will Nightingale, Paul Kalambayi and Luke O'Neill were the three up for the award. What are the results, George?
Well, the winner is Paul Kalambayi with 56% of the vote. And Paul Kalambayi, considering he made his debut on Boxing Day this year, he's been incredible for us since he came in. Had a really good, outstanding game for us on Saturday. Was probably my Man of the Match. And had a goal line block with an unfortunate body part, which has got made its way onto the club's social media feed.
Oh, there we go. Of course it does. We've had a tweet in as well from Bill Drummond at Provider Pro. He has said, wasn't Nesta great?
Yeah, and we have been saying that all of pre-season. Nesta Guinness-Walker looks so far beyond us. He looks so out of place with playing in League One at all. He was the best player on the pitch yesterday. And if we've got him in September next year, we've done a really, really good job, because he is probably one of the best signings we could have ever made.
So this is where, he's 19 years old, Nesta, right? This is where dipping into that non-league market can really pay dividends somewhere. And because of this strategy that Wimbledon are starting to produce now in terms of getting to know their players, figuring out whether they're the right fit for a club. And I know that's the deal with it. You have to figure out whether players are the right fit for the club. But especially at the top level of the game, you don't see that. There isn't that due diligence because you only have to look at the likes of Alexis Sanchez. Clearly wasn't the right fit for Man United, but because he was available and because Man United wanted to get one over on Man City, they signed him and put him on mammoth wages. Quite clearly hasn't worked out. In this instance, doing your research, doing your due diligence for a player that no one else was probably looking at has really paid off.
Yeah, I mean, Nesta did have Chelsea and Brentford looking at him as well.
Oh, right, there we go.
Doing that research and having the players know you're doing that research means they feel so much more valued when we do make an offer for them, because we're saying, we just don't think you're a great player, we think you're a great person as well. And that really must play on a player's mind when they see us making offers, because they think they must feel valued when we make an offer, and that hopefully makes them more likely to join us.
How was the atmosphere yesterday, mate? Was it upbeat? Were people buzzing?
It started off buzzing, but then first half performance was so poor. It was like last season, and it quickly died to death, the atmosphere. But it improved second half. When we started playing well, when we started attacking, when we started creating chances, it picked up a bit again and stayed positive. And I think most people at the game are overwhelmingly positive, because the stuff we saw in the second half was what we saw towards the end of the season. And that is really what we need to do this season.
Wally Downes certainly thought himself that it could have gone either way, is what he said. You know, he thought Rotherham were going to be a good side in the division. They got on the front foot. Could have been difficult, but you turned it around. Do you think it could have gone either way?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Rotherham are a very good team. I think they'll be in and around the promotion spots this year. But it was a really, really good game. First half, we could have been two down easily. But second half, we dominate and we're very unlucky to lose in the end. I thought a draw would have been a fair result.
In terms of first results, I mean, I feel like on this show, both you, more so Kevin. Kevin has been incredibly pessimistic. And if you're listening, Kevin, yes, you have been, about Wimbledon's prospects this season. Losing that first game, what do you think that means both for the fans and the players? Does it mean anything? Do you go, do you know what, maybe we expected to lose to Rotherham. They're going to be one of the better sides in the division. We dust ourselves off and go again next weekend.
Yeah, I think that's what most fans are viewing it as, because what I was saying to people and what a lot of people were thinking was, we have to imagine this as if we're playing Rotherham in February, March, and we'd expect to lose then. So most people went into that game expecting us to lose and wanting a performance, and we got that in the second half. So it's not really a surprise about it, and it's about looking at sort of the next couple of games, which are against teams like Fleetwood. You know, that's where we really need to start showing and starting to pick up some points.
They did well, didn't they? Decent result.
Yeah, they got a good win against Peterborough, and that's a worrying sign for us.
Of course, I mean, the games will come thick and fast now the season starts. It's why it's so crucial. And I often believe this in the lower leagues, especially League One and League Two, and the time that I've spent working for clubs in League Two. You always found there wasn't that much between certain teams. It was all about the start. If you got a good start going, suddenly you just build a bit of momentum. Yeah. And then you go on that run and you become one of the better teams in the division. I don't honestly believe there's that much difference. I mean, with the exception of Bury in League One, you could say because of the shoestring squad that they've now gotten, and Bolton as well. I mean, Phil Parkinson's having to work with some youngsters there, a starting 11 really against Wickham yesterday that he'd never really worked with before. But if you get a good start and you can get a decent result in the Carabao Cup just to get a bit of momentum, and we won't talk too much about it because that's probably going to come in another podcast, which I imagine will be quite eventful if we're allowed to talk about it at all. I don't know what the rules are on that, but it is so important to get that good start, isn't it?
Yeah, momentum's key, and we saw that in the last couple of years when we've stayed up late in the season. It's because we've had a good run in towards the end of the season, picked up a couple of good results. So momentum is important, but like I said, it's a tough start this year. But like in terms of the makeup of the league in League One, you've got, apart from Sunderland, Ipswich, and probably Portsmouth, anyone can beat anyone in this league, and that's why it's going to be so interesting this year. Because like I said, apart from those top three, it's much of a muchness, really.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport Radio. You're listening to the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and George from the 9 Years podcast. We've had a very interesting tweet over in that break, which is a response to me harping on about the fact that both Bolton and Bury had young teams out. Well, Bury, of course, didn't have a young team out because they didn't play, but Bolton had a younger team out yesterday. It's incredible that AFC Wimbledon had a younger starting 11 than Bolton. 23 years and 162 days. Bolton was 24 years and 17 days. Amazing, eh, George?
Yeah, it's something we saw towards the end of the last season in terms of Wally having a really young team, playing a young team. And there were a couple of games towards the end of last season where the team we played, every player on the pitch could have played in our under-23 team. So it's just the fact we're continuing on this season of having a young team. That really bodes well into the future because they're good young players, they're hungry. And it means we can sell a couple of them on in the future if they do well.
Absolutely. And Russell also added that what about Callum Riley? Great debut. In fact, he was late in joining, so no pre-season, but was all over the pitch picking up the pieces.
Yeah, Riley's really the sort of player we've been missing. He's really busy. He's hungry in midfield. He's working hard. He wins the ball back all over. With him and Nightingale, we had a really sort of solid, hard-working midfield playing yesterday. And it meant that Anthony Hartington was able to just do what he does best, which is sit deep and play the ball around a bit.
Do join in the discussion, listeners. We love getting your tweets in. Love Sport 0208 7020 558. And you can reach us on the socials at Love Sport Radio on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Robert Boyce has also messaged in, George, while we're still reacting to the game against Rotherham. He said, apart from Piggott, I cannot see where the goals will come from. Yesterday showed we need to sign a target man, but worried it is not going to happen. It may not do, Robert. I mean, we've got, what, five days?
Until League One has a month.
League One has a month. Of course it does. Sorry, that is my bad, George. I'm so transfixed on the Premier League today. I haven't done other Premier League stuff, of course. So you've got a bit of time.
Yeah.
But still, time is running out for those who are available and on the budget.
Yeah, the budget is really the issue in terms of getting anyone else in. It'll be... Because Wally's gone on record and basically saying, unless someone leaves, we're done. So I think getting a big target man in, I think we're really restricted in what we can do in that area. But in terms of the goals, from where they're going to come from, I like Believe you. He's looked dangerous in pre-season. He looked dangerous again yesterday. Certainly better than he did last year. And I think he could get a few for us this year.
Absolutely. And in terms of target man as well, I think you've got to be careful sometimes about who you get. I was at the Millwall game yesterday against Preston. And yes, they won. And they had new signing Matt Smith up top. And yes, he's a handful, but he's very much Matt Smith, if you know what I mean. He's very much the player that he is. Not particularly mobile. Definitely not quick. Does the job he's there to do. Doesn't really get many goals and is just there to win headers and hold up play.
Yeah, and I think we need to be careful of that because Piggott, who would be the player the target man would play with, presumably, he's not very mobile. He doesn't do much off the ball either. He just scores. Doesn't really offer much else. So if we have a target man like Matt Smith or someone who just Nack and Femwa, we really wouldn't have much in terms of attacking variety and creativity up front.
Does any part of you miss Akinfenwa? Because when Akinfenwa was at a club, Bayo, he not only brings that prowess up top, but he brings the brand as well. Yeah. He brings more attention to the club purely because of the fact that he is Adebayo Akinfenwa. He is the beast. And we've seen with Wickham in particular, and whether they moved for him because of those reasons, but the fact that, you know, the Wickham kit is plastered all over a FIFA promo, we're now seeing these Giacomo ads where Bayo's at Adams Park. It makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think we miss the branding and the marketability of Bayo, and I think we miss him as a player a bit, but the personality of, the player, which Bayo is at every club he is, I think it's probably written into his contract. but we don't miss that sort of thing because this year is much more of a tightly knit squad that wants to work and play for each other. And I don't think Bayo fits into that ethos.
Absolutely, about the club more than it is about the individuals. Now, we're going to move on to the Trust Minutes and the fundraising update. George, you got some news?
Yeah, the Don's Trust released their latest minutes this week, which basically included a sort of roundup of the latest sort of finances and all of that and a couple of other interesting pieces. But the headline thing is we lost £1.3 million last season.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, and for a club like that, it's a worry. I mean, because of everything, we knew we'd lose money last year. We budgeted to lose £1 million. So it meant we went £300,000 over what we expected to lose. And that's not healthy for a club of our size at all.
Mm. Need to get some people buying toilets and hot dog stands and stuff, right?
Yeah, the fundraising thing is open. We would appreciate that if someone could sort of put their name on top of a urinal or something for us.
So we announced that last week. I know the news is already out, but we talked about it last week on the show. What's the comeback been like?
Well, it launched on Tuesday night.
Right.
During our game, which I thought was a very weird time for us to launch a fundraising scheme for our fans, that we launched it during a match.
Mm.
But so far it's raised over 1.2, getting close to 1.3 million now. And that's just our fans. It's only open to the people who have pre-registered so far. It opens to the general public on Tuesday. So it's quite an impressive number, but we do need at least 3 million from this. Otherwise it's, a risk of what we can have in the new stadium.
So, I mean, this is quite serious, right? It's one of those things, and I know we had a bit of a laugh about it last week, and yeah, you can get your name on the club toilets, and you can get your name on the club takeaway stand, the food kiosk, and you know, there are so many other levels up to 100 grand, 250 grand, etc., etc. And whilst we can sit here and have a bit of a giggle about it, it is quite serious. And we're going to move on to Bolton and Bury in a minute. But the reality is, if you don't get that money, what is the situation?
Well, we've got basically there's a £13 million shortfall in funding. And we can have a bank loan of up to £10 million. So we need at least £3 million from the fundraising, sort of crowd share issue, whatever we're going to call it this week. So it is really important we get that. If we don't get that, then the club has to look at cost saving even further on the stadium design, which really no one wants at this stage.
You want it to be a smooth transition, don't you? You want this whole new start for the club. And listen, there's been so many new starts for AFC Wimbledon, but this really is the new start back to your spiritual home. You want it to be as smooth and as painless as possible.
Yeah. And that's the other thing now. We're at this stage where we're fundraising. It's getting real. I think all of our fans have stormed us over us this summer, just how real this is now. And this is our last season at Kings Meadow. We are meant to move into this new stadium in August, and we've just started doing the fundraising now. So I think a couple of people have concerns over it, but we need to raise the money so we can build as best stadium as we can, ready for next summer.
Well, Russell Earl is getting heavily involved in tonight's podcast, and I'm going to go to him because it's just you and I, George, so it's nice to have another voice on today's show. And he has said, whether this is controversial or not, I don't know, but to lose that amount of money after the West Ham game, and this is true, an FA Cup winnings money, that's surely down to poor managing of budget, Ardley and Eric.
Yeah, it's certainly it. There were, in the summer, we spent a lot of money that we didn't have. We knew we offset it against the stadium issue because last summer the stadium was meant to come in under budget. Over the last 12 months, the budget has gone up and we've now got a big shortfall there. And we overspent on the playing budget because really Neil spent money that he thought he had on the basis of getting players out, and the players he thought would leave didn't. And that's where the problem started to occur. But yeah, I think there might have to be some questions, but really I think most clubs in this league lose money. So it's just learning from mistakes more than looking at other things.
Yep, and threadbare squads are certainly the theme. Speaking of threadbare squads, Bury haven't been able to register any new players at the moment. 12-point deduction, as we know. Bolton also in dire straits. Now, firstly, I'm sure you must have been delighted, even though it's a rival club, the fact that Bolton took nearly 2,000 fans to Adams Park yesterday was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to see Bolton pull out. No one likes to see a club in that much trouble. And Bolton, they do appear like they're starting to recover. They presented the EFL with the information they needed to get themselves out of trouble. And it looks like Bolton are on the road to recovery. Bury are in much more trouble. Their owners released a statement today basically saying he's not going to sell the club till they're financially stable.
Mm.
And how can they be financially stable when they don't have a new owner?
Well, this is the tricky thing, right? Because the EFL have obviously suspended their first two games of the season. MK Dons was obviously not able to go ahead. The next game isn't going to go ahead. And he said he's shocked. He can't believe that Accrington game is not going to happen and that he won't sell until he's restored financial stability. Yeah. But how is that going to happen?
I mean, this is a man who's effectively declared war on the EFL and is now saying he's not going to sell the club. The club has got a manager whose only previous experience managing was interim manager at Truro when they got relegated. They've got no players. It doesn't look good for Bury, and I'm really struggling to see a way for them to start the season, let alone finish it.
So in terms of where we stand from a wider viewpoint here in football, and you've got the Premier League, you've got the FA, and you've got the Football League, surely the three of these entities at this stage can come together, because while the Premier League is out there in its own league and it is a global flipping superpower, they owe a lot to Football League clubs. We're talking loan spells, we're talking generation of club of players through the under 23 system. It's such a big pool for them to dip into. We've got the 92. It's a British institution in England. Well, yeah, British because of the Welsh clubs involved. It's an institution for English football, this 92. We are now seeing that under threat, and that is just an awful, awful thing. Surely the powers that be can do something about this, and I know I'm saying this from quite an ignorant perspective, but surely these powers that be can turn around and go, do you know what, we can help these clubs out.
I think there has to be something done. I mean, you look at the EFL TV deal, 80% of that money goes to Championship clubs, 12% goes to League One clubs, and then 8% to League Two. And when you're looking at the money being spent by these clubs, it's not enough, so that we need a fairer distribution of TV money amongst internally with the EFL and more grant money from the Premier League.
Absolutely. Now, in terms of ground, I think we might have touched on this last week as well, but in terms of grounds that you like to go to, obviously Bury, it's great going to Gig Lane. Look, I know it's old and it's a bit ramshackle now, and we've spoken about this, and the old grounds that you see, Kenilworth Road, obviously they're going to be moving on. Bolton obviously moved to the Reebok, Macron now, of course, get it right, sponsorship changes, names changes. But where do you most like to travel to? Do you have a favourite ground that you like to go to?
I think everyone has. It's about what you like. So, I mean, for me, I like grounds where you can stand up behind the goal. For me, that's a big thing. And there are so few grounds. Like, we've got Fleetwood. That's one of the very few coming up to it. Bury, it's an old ground, but they let you go behind the goal. It's a much more... How many of these modern grounds do you go to where you're stuck in a corner of a stadium bowl when the stadium's less than half full? But the grounds that you get, you know, fairly full, you're allowed to stand behind the goal. That's the sort of thing football ground should be, not soulless bowls outside of town.
No, absolutely. And in terms of the atmosphere in the chart, and we saw a bit of a bizarre story earlier on today, or this week, sorry, about the fact that Liverpool fans were looking to trademark the Allez, Allez, Allez song, which is absolutely ridiculous. But are you ever a part of that, George, at Wimbledon? You ever part of the new chant brigade? Were there anything that was sung yesterday that was new, that was exciting?
Yeah, there's a couple of new songs but going around this season. We've got a couple of reworked songs, so the Wallies at the Wheel songs had to be heavily reworked because all our players have left.
Right.
But, you know, it's really going to those away games, having those songs, and, you know, that's a real big part of the club culture for us. And it's not right what Liverpool did this week, and it's very important that fans everywhere unite, because you look at the issues facing clubs, all clubs, like what's happened with Bury and Bolton. Fans need to get together and not stop trying to trademark sort of songs. There's much bigger issues facing the football community right now.
So come on, give me a little rendition of a new one that was heard yesterday.
I believe it's time for an ad break.
Oh, come on, Joe. That could have been a lovely soundbite. We're moving into the next section. But yes, next up, we're going to be talking about the transfer window and just reviewing all those ins and outs.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
There we go, George. That's what I wanted. I wanted that to be your voice. I wanted you to be singing that. Such a shame. Come on, mate. We'll get you singing before the show's out. Now, mate, transfers. It has been, I don't know, could you call it a busy summer for AFC Wimbledon this pre-season?
Yeah, I mean, at the start of it, we let 11 go, even though one of them has since come back. So, which I think everyone's really pleased about, because Joe McDonnell, the player who's returned, is someone who probably... was a bit of a surprise we let go, really. And as a cheap backup keeper, he's certainly an option for us. But yeah, so 10 and who have left and still left. Four of them have gone to so-called bigger clubs than us. And I think that's really telling about the job Wally did at the end of last season. But also, you know, you look, we've had six in already. Probably one more coming in at least. Hopefully anyway. And it's been a busy summer for us, and hopefully we're not done yet.
So if we look at those arrivals, Luke O'Neill, Callum Riley, Nesta, we've spoken about already, of course, Nathan Trott and Michael Falivi as well. Trott, like you said, looks like, well, we don't know what's going to happen yet. It could well be that he returns and all is okay, but that business you're content with?
Yeah, I think everyone wants us to get a target man. It's just a question of whether we can free up the funds to do that. But you look, Nesta Guinness-Walker appears to have been a really good signing so far. Luke O'Neill was impressed, so was Callum Riley. Michael Falivi, we know what he's got. He's a known quantity. You know, Nathan Trott, obviously, we have to wait and see what happens. Ross Grove is, you know, he's a project, I think, is the best way of putting that for us. He's not what we needed in terms of a starting goal-scoring striker, despite the fact he came in and we gave him the number 10 shirt straight away. He probably is our fifth-choice striker already. And that's a worry. I think we probably could have recruited better there. So I think we probably need one more striker.
Okay. And have you got a player in mind? It's always the fantasy land when you used to go into pre-season and think, crikey, who are we going to get? We really want that player that we saw at that time. We want that player who scored against us last season. Have you got a player in mind that you'd like to see at AFC Wimbledon?
Yeah. But I think the name that comes to everyone's mind is Tom Elliott, who was with us before. He went to Millwall. Was meant to go out on loan to Ipswich earlier this week, but injury meant he failed his medical, so he's still available whenever he recovers. So, you know, a player like Tom Elliott, but a mobile target man, is really what we're looking for. We were after people like Norwood earlier in the summer before they went to Ipswich. That's the player we're really missing, you know, quite a big, powerful target man striker.
It was interesting, by the way, just going back to Kevin Cooper and his comments about what is expected of AFC Wimbledon this season. He did say, we'll probably lose to those guys, but we'll beat the likes of Wycombe Wanderers. That's the sort of teams that we should be beating. Do you endorse that? Do you think that's a realistic target?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the teams, like we said earlier, you've got probably 3, 4, maybe even 5 teams at the top of you just got to write off, because realistically, you're not going to get anything from those games. It's the rest of those, the sort of other 15, 16 teams in that league who you're looking at and you're thinking they're the ones we need to get from. It's a sort of a mini league, just those clubs. So they're the teams that you know are going to be around us, the Wickhams, the Accringtons, Gillinghams, Southend. You know, those are the games that we need to win. And that's the one we have to start looking for and start focusing on. And maybe ignore games against Sunderland, Ipswich, knowing that they're bonus games, effectively, and we should be coming out of them happy if we've only lost by one.
In terms of those rivalries that you've got, there's obviously one major rivalry in there. There is another one in terms of Wickham. Is that a rivalry between you and Wickham?
I think only as much as every other team in their rivalry with Wickham as an appreciation of their playing style.
Right. Really?
Yeah, I mean, with us and Wickham, we sort of only met in League Two and we've always had other focuses. And they're sort of half fans owned as well, so there's fan ownership sort of involvement there. So we've always kind of got on with them. And we've played them in pre-season when we were in non-league as well, if I remember correctly. It's just their playing style we don't like.
Hmm. In what sense? Don't shake your words, George. It's all right, mate.
Yeah.
You're an opposition fan. You're allowed to speak. It's the AFC Wimbledon fan cast.
They are very... They're not great gamesmen, we'll put it that way. They're not very... They don't show great sportsmanlike behaviour.
Okay.
I think that's how I'm going to word it.
Right. When you play Wickham, I'm definitely going to look to get an opposition view because I think that could be tasty. It's good to get an opposition fan on. We'll do that for when you play Wickham. Just touching on some of the results from yesterday, I'd quite like to get your view on how you saw that first day going. Obviously, Blackpool beat Bristol Rovers. Great to see Blackpool from a journo's perspective. Great to see them back at the wheel and actually playing in front of a decent atmosphere with fans that are looking forward to see their club play again. Ipswich beating Burton away from home. Coventry winning 1-0 at Southend, of course, playing at St Andrews. I mean, it's a real mishmash this season, isn't it? Doncaster drawing with Gillingham. Lincoln beating Accrington Stanley 2-0. We know that Fleetwood have beaten Peterborough. We'll get onto that later. Shrewsbury defeating Portsmouth was quite a shock. Sunderland drawing with Oxford, again, quite a shock. A thriller between Tranmere and Rochdale. Rochdale winning that 3-2. And, of course, Wickham beating Bolton 2-0. Any surprises in there for you?
I mean, I think, obviously, the Fleetwood score is probably the biggest shock. Sunderland didn't start great last season. It took them a while to get going, so not a huge surprise. I mean, Oxford, I think, are most people's mid-table team this year. I don't think there's a huge number of surprises in there, apart from, I'd say, Fleetwood beating Peterborough, because Peterborough, again, are a playoff team this year.
In terms of strikers as well, we've had another tweet in. Russell, thank you for that. Bournemouth striker Surridge, he was sort of bandied about, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was a name. We were after him in January. We didn't get him because he wanted to move up north and Bournemouth didn't want him to move up north. So they kept hold of him rather than letting him move out on loan to the south. Yeah, I think he's the player we're looking at. He's been involved for Bournemouth in their pre-season. So it'll be interesting if they can let him go or if they want to let him go. But again, I think if they want us to pay any of his wages, I think we need to lose some money off our wage bill.
It's funny that, isn't it? Because you have to get these loan players in to boost the squad. The Premier League clubs like to get rid of them, to develop them as players, but they do cost a lot in terms of wages. How do you feel about loan players coming into the club? Obviously, last season, Aaron Ramsdale, who we repeatedly talk about on this podcast, even though he's not a Wimbledon player anymore, obviously was a big factor in your FA Cup run and just generally playing very well for the club. Do you like the loan market? Do you dislike the fact that when it comes to the end of the season, you know you're going to have to let them go again?
No, I think it's the price you pay, because you look at a player like Aaron Ramsdale and Steve Steadon, who we got in from Birmingham. You know, these are players who we would never be able to afford on our own. So having them for a year or 6 months for sort of cheap wages, but even if we're only paying 30% of their wages, it's a huge benefit to the club, and it benefits them, because people like Nick Zanev, who played in goal for us on Saturday, he would have learned so much playing and training with Ramsdale for 6 months. Players around the club would have learned from people like Steve Seddon. So the loan market is beneficial for us, and it's a cheap way of getting in some high-quality players.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving forward to your expectations again, George. I know, again, this is something we discussed in previous podcasts ahead of the new campaign, but now there's one game down. Have you learned anything from that first game? Can you learn anything from a first game?
Yeah, I think we basically learned that we can do well. I mean, we did really well in the second half. So I think if we can do that, Rotherham weren't fully at the pace, so it's hard to learn much from that. But realistically, I think we're going to be where we all thought we would be, which is bottom half of the table, and aiming to stay up hopefully a bit earlier than we did last year.
Okay. And in terms of the fundraising again, I know that we spoke about this in the previous segment, but what was the eventual comeback? I mean, did you get anything from fans that obviously listened to the show and had heard you guys talking about it? And was there chat about it on the terraces that people were thinking we might get involved, we might not get involved? What's the situation with it? We don't know if someone puts in 100 grand, what that means in terms of ownership and control over the club.
Yeah, no, I think it's something that all of our fans want to get involved with. Obviously, it's the chat of the town, so to speak, because everyone really, really wants to sort of work it out, invest as much money as they can and try and get this to happen, because for a while it looked like this wouldn't happen at all. So people now want to play their part and to effectively own their own part of the history of what is going to happen, which will be a historical event for our club.
And speaking of the history, now, looking at it from an outsider's perspective, you know, I've got my knowledge of AFC Wimbledon, I've got my knowledge of Wimbledon back in the day. It's a lovely story, but I don't know the perception of fans of Wimbledon present and Wimbledon past. And is it ever seen as two separate entities? Is it seen as just the same club?
I mean, really, there's two generations of Wimbledon fans, but you've got the ones who went to Plough Lane and the ones who went to Selhurst. And then you've got the people like me who really don't remember any of those days and only remember AFC Wimbledon and King's Meadow. And it's important because it's important that people of the younger fans are listened to in this stage, because they're about to lose what they consider their home stadium going back to Plough Lane. So there's a bit of, it's not so much a disagreement there, but it's important that all of our fans are listened to and everyone's thoughts are taken on board as to how we do this properly.
So is there some conflict, in a sense, between fans? Because obviously Kevin is on the show with us. He supported Wimbledon back in the day for years, since the 70s, I believe. So it's great that we've got both of you on, because we've got the old and we've got the new. But is there conflict between past and present? Because you do get that at any club, to be fair. And clubs that didn't have that period of not quite knowing what was going on, there's still fans that are current fans that act in a certain way on social media and don't really take any notice of that history. So, I mean, you take the 1988 FA Cup final, of course, which is always banded around as the greatest moment in Wimbledon's history. Is that something that you embrace, or do you prefer to sort of let that be and look forward?
No, I think it's important we embrace it, because you look at that, you embrace it, and you use that of, you know, the crazy gang era and what happened in the players before that. Because from 1889 right up to 2019 is a continuous story. There's been so many events, so many ups and downs in the history of Wimbledon. It's important we keep that going, because that's part of the club's blood, part of the club's DNA. And when you forget that, it doesn't bode well for the future of the club.
And I guess on that, and we won't try and keep talking about this in every podcast, but it is good to discuss it slightly. This whole crazy gang notion and the fact that Wally was a part of that, is that something that you, I mean, I don't think it would obviously ever come back, but some of the stories you used to hear, I mean, I spoke to Kelvin Davis, who was a goalkeeper for Wimbledon, obviously for a brief period, and he spoke about the fact that it was just insane. He would leave training and all sorts of stuff would be piled all over his car, you know, ties being cut and all sorts left in your socks. And he said that it was tough when he first arrived. It was really difficult, purely from a mental perspective, not to show weakness and also just to go, yeah, all right, I'm on board with that. I'll have a bit of a laugh too. Is that something that the fans look back on and you're proud of that time?
Yeah, I think we are, because you look at it and what we did back then was really looking forward and building, and the squad harmony then. For all of that, and I mean, the podcast, Kevin Borras, we released an interview with Ian Holloway this week, and he just talked about what that did for him as a person, being involved in that environment. And I think what he's trying to get, obviously we can't go to the extent we did back then because that's probably illegal now, but it's about that, basically being a squad, being a unit, and other teams not wanting to play with, and that's what Wally's trying to build.
Absolutely. And one of those players was Dean Holdsworth, of course, involved in the club. On the Love Sport Weekend Breakfast yesterday with Ewan Thomas and Paul Mortimer, he spoke about the expectations for the club this season. And Mort's actually asked Dean if he was expecting a comfortable position this year, or even, dare we say it, even a promotion push.
I think the promotion word would be in everyone's mind. Obviously, it'd be a tough ask for them after the season they had last year. But, you know, the stranger things have happened in football. That, you know, it's that continuity, the confidence, the players come in. The remit last year was obviously when he came in, right, keep us up, and they've done that, which, you know, by the skin of their teeth, but they've still done it. The facts are there. So, you know, with fresh players coming in, Wally's expectations will be high. He'll demand high levels of work rate and big hearts, and hopefully the quality will come through with some of the players as well. You know,
and what's honestly, you know enough about the division. What is really possible for a Wimbledon this season? You know, average punching above their weight. What do you think they can achieve?
I think they should punch above their weight. I think that if you play for Wimbledon, it comes with an expectancy, and that is that you. I'm not saying that the old crazy game can be rebuilt or anything like that. Them days have changed. But what I will say is that there's an expectancy from the Wimbledon fans over the years that they want to see their players and sweat their socks off and give everything for the club and for the badge. With a new stadium coming up as well, you know, Wally will definitely want to go into a new stadium at some point when that happens. And obviously, God willing, that they'll have a good season, you know.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport and the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, joined by George from the 9 Years podcast. We've got about 10 minutes left before we go for another week. Dean Holdsworth there, George. The fans will just want the players to sweat their socks off. That's fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as a Wimbledon, because of the club we had, like we were talking about before the break, the crazy gang, and basically, as fans, we don't really care. You know, we don't mind if you're not the most technically gifted player in the world. But if you run around more and work harder than anyone else, well, we love you. Look at players like Danny Bullman. You know, someone who technically wasn't the best player, but he was in his mid-30s and he was still running around, you know, working for everything, fighting for second balls. And as a fan base, that's what we really want.
Yeah, Danny Bullman, of course. Now, I believe the Football League's oldest player, is he?
I think he's just turned 40.
Amazing. Still saying he's got bills to pay and he'll continue to run around like a madman. Yeah, quite a credit to himself. Has been with a few clubs in the Football League and always done his job. I actually remember I saw Danny Bullman's first ever goal when he was playing for Wycombe Wanderers. He'd come from Ashford Town and he was a youngster, and he gained a bit of a reputation for just chasing goalkeepers down, and everybody expected him to just chase goalkeepers down all the time. And it was an early season game against Bristol Rovers, I think, and finally it paid off because the keeper, I can't remember who the keeper was, but just launched it. It whacked Bullman on the backside and it went. Of course, a start of a very, very good Football League career. Now, George, next week, it's Fleetwood. They obviously won 3-1 against Peterborough on the opening day. Very, very good performance. What are your hopes, your dreams, your expectations for that one?
Well, I mean, we've got a reasonable enough record away to Fleetwood, touch wood. But we won there twice last year. We won away opening day and we beat them in the cup, in the third round of the FA Cup as well away. So really, Fleetwood's a place we always travel to well. We always take reasonable enough numbers there. So hopefully we'll be able to go and get a result, because if we head into games 3-4 in the season, especially with a League Cup game in between, and we still haven't won, then that's when the pressure starts to build. So we'll need some. I think we'd all like to get something at Fleetwood.
And in terms of the starting 11, do you foresee Wally going with the same crop?
Yeah, I can't imagine many changes to it. I mean, obviously, goalkeeper is the one that is the most likely to change if we're able to get someone else in, or if Nathan Trott isn't as injured as everyone else fears and he can come back. You know, but realistically, I think it'll be near enough the same starting 11 for us, which, you know, from what we saw in the second half on Saturday, is hopefully a positive thing, and we'll be able to build on that performance and might be able to get something.
And the keeper situation is what it is. I mean, you imagine he'll probably go with Zanev again unless he brings another keeper in this week. Midfield options, you imagine he'll probably stick with the same lot, or will he potentially mix it up?
Yeah, well, I mean, Anthony Wordsworth missed the game on Saturday through injury, and we had Will Nightingale coming in as a midfielder, even though he's sort of obviously a natural centre-back. So it'll be interesting if Will Nightingale continues in midfield or if Anthony Wordsworth comes in, who does he come in for? You know, when we had Shane McLaughlin and Jack Rudoni, who have impressed in pre-season, on the bench. So we've got a wealth of options there. But really, I think the midfield, they were all over the place in the first half, but they really came together as a unit in the second half. And Fleetwood do tend to try and play through midfield on occasion. So maybe having Will Nightingale there will be a benefit as well. So it's just a question of if Wordsworth comes in, and if he does, which of Riley and Hartigan does he come in for?
Okay, and in terms of your preference, what would you prefer?
Personally, I would probably keep it the same, just because I think we found something in the second half that started to work and it started to gel. And I think Wordsworth's a great player, but I think maybe it might be a bit too soon to rush him back because it's a long season and we don't want to risk him getting injured again.
It is. I mean, I know we spoke about this as well. Like, it is crucial, isn't it? You've lost to Rotherham, Fleetwood up next. They've had a great start. You've got your Carabao Cup game, and then it's Accrington, it's Ipswich and Sunderland away from home. Then you've got Wickham. Then again, it's that archenemy after that. I mean, it's quite a tough start, isn't it?
That's the thing, really, because I think realistically, we're looking at it saying we've got Fleetwood, we've got those Wickham games. And, you know, if you take away the Carabao Cup game, we've got those two games where if we don't win one of them, we're looking at maybe having an opening run of our first five, six games and not winning. And we really need to get something at Fleetwood and something against Accrington just to start building momentum and to keep something on the board. Because even though we're 12 points clear of Bury and Bolton, and there's still two relegation places up for grabs, excluding those two. And it's really important we don't get dragged into that or cut off so early. So we need some points before the end of August.
Is any part of you concerned, George, about the season ahead?
Yeah, I think all of our fans are looking at it, going through what we did last year. We stayed up by the skin of our teeth on the final day. So I think we're all looking at it and hoping we can survive. But we started really well last year, and that's got a couple of people saying we don't necessarily need to start so well, because last year we fell off a cliff from sort of September to November and lost seven games in a row. So if we don't start well, it's not the end of the world, providing we're a bit more consistent throughout the rest of the season and can pick up points there. But I think we're in for a long season, and it won't be a relaxing season by any means.
Won't be a relaxing season. Do you know what I mean? I'm presuming you're going to be at every single game again?
Yes, of course. I'll never miss a game.
Now, George, tell me, did you manage to maintain your tradition of being in the ground first this weekend?
Yeah, home games are easy. It's the away games that are fun.
That are fun?
Yes.
Now, just remind me, no one ever challenges you on this, right? No one tries to get in there before you?
A couple of people have, but not regularly, no.
Okay, interesting. Well, George, seeing as you profess to be, I guess, an AFC Wimbledon super fan, right? Would you call yourself an AFC Wimbledon super fan?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it.
Okay, now Kevin isn't here today, so it's just you and I thought I would take this opportunity to quiz you, George, and pose a few questions. Now, these are quite easy. It's nothing too crazy, but we've got the music now. Thank you very much for that, David. I'm just going to pose a few questions to you, George, and see how well you do. You've been supporting Wimbledon since how long?
About 12 years.
12 years. Right, okay. Ooh, there could be some toughies in this one. George, when were AFC Wimbledon formed?
We were reformed in 2002.
Reformed. My apologies, George. Terrible. What a start. There we go. So he's even correcting the quizmaster. Brilliant. And the first season... There we go. Hey, there you go, little bing. The first season was contested in which division?
Combined Counties.
Absolutely, the Premier Division. I'll give you that. Now, how many AFC Wimbledon managers can you name?
We had Terry Eames. We then had Nick English as caretaker. Dave Anderson, Terry Brown, Simon Batty as caretaker twice, if we want to count them. Neil Ardley and Wally Downs.
Oh, you've missed one.
Have I?
Simon Batty?
I said he was a caretaker twice.
Oh, you did. I apologise. He said it twice. This is why you're on the show, George. I'll tell you what. Now, AFC Wimbledon currently hold the record for the longest unbeaten run of league matches in English senior football. How many was it?
Oh, it was it 79?
Oh, he's so close. The first one he's missed. It was 78 consecutive league games. Sorry, George. 78 without defeat. February 2003 to December 2004. That is a staggering run, isn't it?
Much better than Arsenal's runs around the same period.
Now, is there a chant for that?
No, not really, because it was against the sort of opposition which, you know, not other football fans in our level now won't have ever heard of them.
Oh, OK. All right. Promotion to the EFL was achieved in what year?
2011.
Oh, easy. Player of the year in 2015-16 was who?
Oh, okay. Was that Lyle Taylor?
It wasn't.
Paul Robinson then.
Paul Robinson. Yes, correct. We'll give him that one. You won. AFC Wimbledon won a minor tournament in the 2009-10 season. What was that tournament?
Was that the London or Surrey Senior Cup?
It wasn't.
A minor tournament?
Yes, it was.
Oh, was it the Isle of Man?
The Isle of Man tournament, George. Correct. Who is AFC Wimbledon's record appearance maker?
Sam Hatton.
Defender Sam Hatton, 187 league appearances between 2007 and 2012. And lastly, I'm going to give you one more. Two more. So the penultimate one, who is the club's record goal scorer?
Kevin Cooper.
Absolutely. How many goals?
Over 100.
Yeah, 90 league goals, but over 100 in total. Now, the last one, because we did talk about past and present. When Wimbledon won the FA Cup in 1990, how did John Motson describe it at the final whistle?
When we won the FA Cup in 1988.
88. What did I say?
90.
Sorry, 1988. It was Man United in 1990.
The crazy gang have beaten the Culture Club.
Correct, George. There we go. George has reaffirmed the notion that he is indeed a super fan. I'm very, very impressed with that, George.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, we might do that when Kevin's next in as well.
Oh, yeah. Me versus Kevin. Give me all of the ones post-2002. I've got a chance.
Okay. I might make that a regular segment on the show. We'll finish with a quiz each time. George, I believe our time is nearly up. Just again, predictions for next week. If you could do a prediction for next week, what would you say? If you could put your hat on it, you're going to say this is going to be the score against Fleetwood next week.
I get a feeling we'll sneak a 2-1 win.
A 2-1 win. There we go. George says 2-1 to AFC Wimbledon next week. Right, okay. This has been the AFC Wimbledon podcast for another week. Thoroughly enjoyable. Thank you, George.
Thank you.
And we will be back next Sunday at 8 p.m. on the AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.